All right, good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for coming out to the Fremont Opera House for our Husker Luncheon. Good to see you again. Thanks for being here. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And we've got a lot of answers from Steve Sipple. I'm putting him on the spot. He's got all the answers of what we were going to talk about coming up in Husker football. I do want to thank our fine sponsors that bring us our luncheons each and every week. Of course, First State Bank and Trust Company, Dean Jacobs Adventures, Weesey Plumbing and Excavating, Freeway Car Care Center, and S2 Refuse and Recycling, and of course, the Fremont Opera House. Thank them when you see them. Thank you very much for what they do for us. One thing we can say is that every single week when the catering service of Midland has brought us food, it's been good every week. It's been good again this week, too. So thanks to Pam and Grim who put things together. I appreciate what they've been able to do for us as well. Usually this is the portion of the program where I talk about what's going on our local sports scene. It's Thanksgiving. It's kind of quiet right now. There's really not much to talk about. We're transitioning from the high school and the small college at Midland to the fall to the winter sports. I think I did mention that Midland's football season did wrap up as they had a COVID issue with their game against Concordia. They were going to try to make it up for this Saturday, but both teams decided that it was in their best interest to just go ahead and wrap up the season, so they've done that. Basketball has rolled into things on the Midland side of things right now. The Midland women having their best start in quite some time. They're 7-1 in the season and number 2 in their conference, and that's a very, very one of the more competitive conferences in the country, so they're off to a very good start. And the Midland men, they are very young, and they're starting 3 freshmen, and they're going to be going here pretty soon in the right direction, I can tell. They are at home tomorrow and take on Dakota State in the Dremel Classic that takes place at the Weichert Event Center. Of course, we've got Husker football to talk about as they get set to take on the Iowa Hawkeyes coming up tomorrow, or rather on Friday. And Steve Sipple is with the Lincoln Journal Star, and he's going to come up here, and he's going to speak to us a little bit about that. I do have good news before we get to that, though. Husker men's basketball team is up by 22 at halftime right now, so that's good news. So, yeah, so good stuff there. Steve Sipple, Lincoln Journal Star, answers every question that you have, every single one of them.
Thank you, Rich. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I am thankful for that. I appreciate it. You guys are obviously great fans.
I think we should thank you for coming. I'm
glad to do it. I can't even tell you how happy I am to do it. I'm serious. I am more thankful for football than I probably ever have been. Because there was a chance that they weren't going to play. And I am thankful for the opportunity to talk about it. I don't have a hard time talking about it, even when they're struggling, because I'm really, I always say it on my radio show, I'm as interested as I've ever been, and maybe a little more than some periods of 30 years I've been covering it. so I can say periods instead of just years. I'm really interested in watching to see if Frost can pull out of this spiral. It's like a plane going down almost, it feels like right now. And I'm wondering if he can pull it out of the spiral. And I don't know. I mean, I would say that it's too soon to say that he can't, but I would say it's not too soon to wonder. So that's where we're at. And it's not hard for me to size up that way. None of us thought, think about it. I have to think about this stuff a lot because it's my job. Think about how excited we were when we took the job. And it was December 3rd of 2017. And you know, the whole thought I had was, he has this cutting edge offense. He obviously relates well to the kids because he did at Central Florida. They were coming off an undefeated season. He was going to be, his play calling would probably evolve into an edge maybe that we enjoyed when Osborne was on the sidelines. And if I would have gone on shows or come here and said, we got to be careful. I wouldn't be surprised if in the first 30 games he only won 10. It would have been sounding crazy, right? so we're all a little, I think we're all a little bewildered. I am a little bewildered by it. I was really bewildered on Saturday. I have to admit I was. I wouldn't have been probably caught off guard by a close loss, but I was caught off guard by how easily Illinois won. I was surprised by that. I don't get surprised by much at this point in my career. I've been at the Journal Star since 90, as a full-time employee, 1990. But I was working there part-time in 89. And I've been covering the team full-time since 95. So I've seen a lot. So not a ton, not a lot surprises me. But I have to admit, it raised my eyebrows on Saturday. This will turn more upbeat in a second, I imagine. I was surprised how easily Illinois was moving the ball and how I wasn't necessarily surprised by Nebraska's offensive frustrations, because we've seen that this year. That's a real problem that isn't going away. But I couldn't believe how easily Illinois was moving the ball. And so what I wrote in my column the next day was, I thought I had the team sized up pretty well going in, and then the conversation evolved. It evolved this way. I thought going into the season that Nebraska had two clear strengths that would be there all the time and that would push them through a lot of tough times. And that would be the offensive line, number one, and number two, the quarterback position. However it looked, I didn't know going in exactly who was going to be the quarterback, but I just liked the whole setup of quarterback. I liked Adrian Martinez. I thought he'd come back strong. I liked having McCaffrey. I loved that. I heard the conversation in the offseason. Guys were saying a lot that he was doing great things. I thought, okay, that's good. You have Logan Smothers coming up. But what's happened, how it's evolved is problematic, because the offensive line really hasn't played all that well since the first half against Ohio State. And the quarterback position is, you know, it's unstable right now, and it's just played okay. And at times not okay. And I didn't really foresee that. Now, all these conversations are very, you know, the beauty, I always tell you guys, part of the reason I love football, covering football, is because they're always pretty complex discussions. In football, there's a lot that can go wrong. There's just a lot, even on a given play, that can go wrong. That's why it's so incredible when you see these teams that, like Alabama, that's been ranked number one at some point in 13 straight seasons. That's sort of the way they have been able to manage that program to a point where they're always really good and operate at a high level is incredible, because of what we're seeing in Nebraska. When it goes wrong, it can really go wrong. And it takes a lot to get it back. So I thought those two things would be stabilizers, if not ways for the program to maybe compete for a division title. Those two factors leading the way. That hasn't been the case. And then I thought, okay, well, while those two things get worked out, they'll be able to lean on the defense, because the defense has looked pretty good. Remember, it looked pretty good for 25 minutes against Ohio State. Played pretty well against Northwestern, except for two drives. Held Northwestern at 317 yards, which is pretty good. And then against Penn State, at least it dug in and got those two great stops late in the game. So I thought, okay, they're going to be able to lean on that group a little bit while they get the other stuff worked out. And then the conversation evolved in a tough direction. Illinois ran for 285 yards and averaged 5.5 a carry. Never did I imagine that was going to happen. I can't. That was the surprising thing to me, that Illinois had two 100-yard rushers at the running back position. And that's, you know, I give Illinois a lot of credit. You have to do that, and I don't do that enough. I don't know about you guys, but I always look at what Nebraska did so poorly instead of looking at more closely at what the opponent did. And Illinois really outcoached Nebraska, really outcoached them. I mean, their offensive game plan was excellent. I mean, I'm not going to get into the football jargon and all that of what they did, but they saw a couple things with what Nebraska was doing, and they adjusted their run game accordingly. And Nebraska never readjusted, and that's the scary thing to me. That Illinois was doing the same thing over and over a lot, in some variation, but the basic concept, and Nebraska never really adjusted to it. That's a little scary to me after watching it, after talking. I know there's an old coach I talk to all the time who said, hey, that was the problem. So, and then of course the special teams let them down a little bit. One of the more bizarre plays you'll ever see to begin the second half, early in the second half, when the punter took off and ran 14 yards as Nebraska players were running down the field, all except for one. That's the kind of play my mom, my dear mom, who knows nothing about football, could look at and say, Steve, that wasn't something that didn't look right. You're right on, it didn't look right. I've never seen it happen. So, you know, now, there is, you don't want to overreact. And I always try really hard, especially at this stage of my life, to not overreact to anything. You do have to keep this all in the proper context. Nobody picked Nebraska to beat Ohio State. It would have been a major surprise if they had. That game went about as we expected. They were in the game with Northwestern to the very end, and Northwestern is ranked 8th in the first college football playoff poll. They're number 8, and they got they play Michigan State next, and then Minnesota, and then Illinois. They have a great chance to be 8-0 going into the Big Ten championship game. You beat Penn State, and I would say that was a good win. I know Penn State's really struggling, haven't won a game, 0-5, but that's not a bad team. They're not bad. I thought that was a good win. So what happened was that Illinois game was it was sort of, like I said, it was sort of bewildering. The ease with which Illinois won. If Illinois just won a close game, it would be bad enough, and we would be wondering about things. But I guess we're really wondering about things because of the nature of the loss. Now maybe they can Nebraska can confuse us a little more by beating Iowa. It would be really confusing to me if that happens. But I would invite that sort of confusion. I think it would be great if we had no idea what was going on at the end of Saturday or Friday. It's hard to pick it. A lot's going to have to go right. Game's at noon. I think Rich is up Fox.
Yes.
It's up Fox. It's Robert Smith again on the. He's doing the color commentary. He's done 3 straight games now, Robert. And just to get into that game a little bit, there's one really odd stat that comes to mind. Nebraska's averaging 198 rushing yards per game. Nebraska is ranked 34th in the country in rushing. Iowa is averaging 186 rushing yards per game. Nebraska's actually, statistically, the better rushing team. It's one of the more misleading stats you'll ever see. Nebraska's rushing is coming from the quarterback position. Theirs comes exclusively almost from the running back position. And you have to factor in sack, yards lost, via sacks. That's what skews the number. Iowa's got big advantages pretty much in every category. So it'll be really tough. Iowa's interesting. I mean, they're always interesting to me, because if you look at all virtually, and I did this yesterday, so I can say this confidently, if you look at their top two rushers, their quarterback, and their top five receivers, none of them were highly recruited guys. None. None of them were more than three stars. And some of them were two. If you look at their top six tacklers, same thing. Just a bunch of three-star guys. I mean, it's not, if you look at their recruiting rankings compared to Nebraska, Nebraska is way ahead of Iowa. It's always a fascinating discussion to me. And a lot of it, I mean, a lot of it is just, it's sort of simple. Ferentz has been there since 1999. Since 1999, this is his 22nd year. And they have a very, very, very established way of doing things. And they recruit to it. So they know exactly what kind of player they want for, you know, each position. And they get those guys. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether they're, what kind of star they have by their, that name. And they don't necessarily, they're not all Midwest kids. They're like Tyler Goodson. Their best running back is from Suwanee, Georgia. Mekhi Sargent, the guy they bring in after him, who's really good, by the way. They have two really good running backs. He's from Florida. Their receivers are, I mean, Sam LaPorte, they, by the way, typical Iowa, they have a great tight end. Be ready for that. Sam LaPorte is their leading receiver, and he's an Illinois kid. They get guys. I mean, in fact, all those guys, when I'm talking about their two best running backs and their five best receivers, none of them are from Iowa. And it's the same with the defense. They don't have kids from Iowa. They're from all over the place. Now, that doesn't mean they don't get kids from Iowa, but their best players aren't from the state of Iowa right now. So on offense, I'll stay there. They have an interesting quarterback, pure dropback guy. He doesn't run the ball at all. He's 6'5". He's 6'5", I think about 215. He can really throw it. I mean, he's a dropback guy, big guy, strong arm. You don't have to worry about him running it. And he's not having a great year. He completes 55% of his passes. I noticed something about him against Northwestern, though, and I thought it was really, really interesting. When they played Northwestern, they lost that game. It wasn't a good loss. It was at home, and Northwestern basically handed them a 17-0 lead. They had a 17-0 lead against Northwestern because Northwestern turned it over twice or three times. And it wasn't going well for Iowa. They weren't moving the ball. But I noticed something about Petras that stuck in my head. And it's one of the few times I was sort of right. I wasn't worried about Iowa because of the way he was really upbeat. And really, like, you could see him on the sideline when they were down 17-0. He was having a bad game. He was encouraging his teammates. He was very upbeat on the field, even after he threw a pick. You could tell the kid has something. I mean, I bet that's one of the reasons why they stuck with him and will probably stick with him. He's very, I guess you can see, he's a very high character kid. And there's a lot to be said for that. What happened is they lost that game to go to 0-2 because they lost to Purdue to open the season. Then they lost to Northwestern. They're 0-2, and it's due time in Iowa. It was bad. I know Rick Kaczynski used to coach here. He also used to coach at Iowa. And I talk to Kaz all the time. And it was a bad deal in Iowa, probably kind of like it is here a little bit. But then they won three straight games. And I thought that kid – tell he's not going to fold. And he didn't. But they also, beyond, now here's where it's different from Nebraska. See, it's not all on the quarterback at Iowa. They have those two running backs. You know, Sargent, the backup's averaging 6.6 a carry. Fewer carries than the starter, obviously, Tyler Goodson, who's averaging 5.5. They got the run game going. So the quarterback, there's not so much on his shoulders. They have the run game going. That's the impetus to them winning three straight games. They got it going. They for some reason against Northwestern, they threw it 50 times, ran it 26. And 50 times they threw it. And then they went, I think they probably said, we can't, that's not the way we do it. So they went back to being Iowa, got the run game going, and got their season back on track. They'll you know what they're going to do against Nebraska. They're going to run those stretch plays left, stretch play right, stretch play left. And if Nebraska doesn't stop it, they'll just keep doing it. Nebraska did a pretty good job against it last year. It wasn't, they didn't run the ball well against Nebraska last year in that game. They ran the ball really well the first half in 2018, and then Nebraska shut it down pretty well in the second half. So it's not a lost cause. But last year, if you remember, by the way, the Davis twins and Darian Daniels were fabulous in that game. Darian Daniels, that's the best I've ever seen him play. So you got to get that, the defensive line's really, really got to come to play. Really does. I mean, and a lot more of them than in some of these games, because it's going to be a lot of four-down linemen. They're going to have to get a lot from the usual suspects, Stilley, Todd Robinson, Casey Rogers, Damian Daniels. But this is the kind of game where they're going to need Jordan Riley, who we haven't seen a lot of, Keem Green, who we haven't seen a lot of. I think those guys are going to have to be big. And then, you know, you're not going to have Colin Miller, obviously. He's okay, though. Not okay in a sense. I don't think he's going to play again this year. But he's walking around and all that. The problem is he's a good player. He was, like Frost said, Colin Miller was the heart and soul of the defense. So he's an inside linebacker. He's big in the run game. Well, Will Honus holds up well in the run game because Will Honus is a big inside linebacker. Now, Luke Reimer, not a big inside linebacker, 220 pounds. This is going to be a big challenge for him, and they'll go right at him, I guarantee it. They'll go right at Reimer because he's pretty small for an inside linebacker. So that'll be a big part of the game. Get back to the quarterback discussion. See, I'm talking about Spencer Petras and how he's been, how, you know, they don't ask as much of their quarterback as Frost does. And in fact, if I was, I would say if Frost asked me to go to Perkins with him and say, hey, help me solve my offense, he would never do that, but you never know. I'd say you're putting too much on the quarterback's shoulders. I mean, I think under the best of, in the best of times, he does a little bit of that. That's a hard, that's a hard position to play in his offense. They ask a ton of that guy. Offenses do, I get it. But not every offense asks a quarterback to run 20 times in the first half. I mean, that was an incredible number. Now, they weren't all called run plays, I get it, but a lot of them are. That's just putting too much on that position. They're asked to do so much mentally. They're asked. I just think it's incredible almost what they have to do. He asked them to be. They have to be super intelligent to play the position, and not only for their own sake, but now they got these young guys playing receiver, and what I'm seeing a little too much of is the quarterback having to babysit guys. They got enough on their plate without having to worry whether their receivers can line up right. And the way to alleviate the problem the number one way is to get your running back run game going. You know, I talk about Nebraska averaging 198 yards per game on the ground, and, you know, if you look at that and you don't know what's going on, you say, that's not bad. But if you know what's going on, it doesn't look good. They're running. They're relying on the quarterback to carry the load in the run game. And I always say that's fool's gold. There's a line. It's okay to a point, but if you can't over rely on it, and it's sort of an easy way out because of the numbers game. The quarterback's not accounted for by the defense in the run game often. So it just seems like an easy way out a lot of the time. They're just, you know, we don't have any answer on third and seven, so just run the quarterback lead play because we don't got anything else. That's no way to live. I mean, you can maybe get by a little bit that way, but you're not going to win. You're not going to win a championship, and you're going to lose to good teams because they sniff that out real fast. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to see Dedrick Mills, but I never thought at this point in the season that he would only be averaging 3.3 yards a carry. Now, he didn't play last week. He only played one series against Penn State. Hopefully you see him. He's the kind of back you need against Iowa. Remember last year in the second half against Iowa. Remember that game, Nebraska kind of dinked around on offense in the first half, ran a lot of bubble screens and trick plays. Remember they ran two trick plays that I can remember. Brought McCaffrey and he threw that touchdown pass to Spielman, which was good. But they were doing a lot of kind of weird stuff. And in the second half, clearly they went into halftime and said, look, let's just play like we should. And Dedrick Mills ran it 21 times in the second half of that game. And Nebraska looked pretty good on offense and almost got that win. So he's big. You need him in this game. I don't know if you're going to see him, but I think he's integral this week if he's well, if he can play. If he can't play, they got to get more production from the running backs somehow. They're just not getting anything from that position. You know, I love Juan Dale there, but man, it takes a lot of shots. I mean, he's small, really small. And he's not really like Amir. Amir was a sturdier guy, bigger, thicker neck and shoulders. Juan Dale is just small. I just don't think you can continue to pound him at teams even 15 times a game. That's especially this defense. So what I'm telling you is Frost has a lot to figure out offensively. I mean, a lot. I don't know exactly how he's got to do it. And that's what I got to kind of go back to what I was talking about. It's like an airplane pilot trying to pull it out of a tailspin. I mean, I don't know what his answers will be. Now, I think you guys would agree, if you've listened this week, it sounds like you're going to get Adrian at quarterback to me. I'd be a little surprised if they don't go back to Adrian as a starter. I think it makes sense against this team in part just because of how physical Iowa is. Adrian's a big guy, can handle it, has seen Iowa twice, played really well as a freshman, remember, about let him back in that game to a win. I thought McCaffrey's very young at the position. He looks like it. You know, we got to see a full game of him, and one big takeaway is he looks young at the position, and he doesn't, you know, he didn't see receivers. Now, you could come back and say, well, you got to give him more chances. He's a young guy. He's a redshirt freshman. He hasn't played the quarterback position for very long. Maybe you just keep sending him out there, but I don't know. I mean, that's the kind of thing Frost's got to figure out. I think, you know, one way to look at it is, did they make the move on pulling Adrian too quickly? you didn't really know at the time that Northwestern actually has actually one of the best defenses in the country. You know, and Adrian, as bad as he looked in that game, 12 for 27 is 12 for 27. That's not the efficiency you can live with. But it's a good defense. And there were, and again, they're asking so much of Adrian. So now, I don't know, I think you maybe give him another shot. I mean, I thought when he came in, he looked good against Illinois. It was kind of like, wow, he, you know, if I was just a, I always try to think of myself as just a guy coming in from Cincinnati, seeing Nebraska for the first time. I try to look at it through that lens a little bit sometimes. I know I would have thought, wow, what? Why didn't they play that guy, you know, when they put Adrian in? He looked good. We'll see what happens there. I don't have any insight. Frost is really good. And, you know, we're in a world where there's, you know, we get these Zoom calls and all that. You don't get a lot of inside information right now. And I mean, there were guys on the team last week that didn't know who was going to be starting. So I don't feel too bad about it. I don't know. I just have a feeling from what Frost has said that it'll be Adrian. Now, Frost did say something this week that was really curious to me. Maybe you guys caught it when he said that McCaffrey is the future of that position at Nebraska. That feels like something a head coach ordinarily wouldn't say. Because if I was Logan Smothers' dad, I'd say, what did he say? That's the future? What about us? Even Adrian, I would look at that and say, wait a second, what's going on here? I don't know if Frost meant it the way he said it. I was really taken aback by it right away. So I don't know. I don't know what that means. I'll next time we talk to Frost, I'll ask him. But the other thing I'd say about that is Sean said something interesting today. We were talking as I was driving up. He's been covering it almost as long as I have. It's never the access to information has never been this hard. And I knew Frost would be this way. He's tightened it up quite a bit, which I don't mind it that much. I think Nebraska is a big-time program and should be ran as such. Sometimes I've been uncomfortable over the years with how many leaks there were and how easy it was to get information. I think about Nebraska like I think about the New York Yankees. You know, I think that it should be run like a big-time organization, and Frost does that. They do have strong organization. It feels good from that standpoint, but you know, what matters is what happens on Saturdays, and that's not 10 and 18. I think he's 7 and 15 in the Big Ten. It's got to start changing, so maybe it will on Friday. I'll answer any of your questions. I think we're doing pretty good so far. Go ahead, Chuck.
I'm starting to say Sean told you something.
Oh, Sean was saying it's never been this hard to get information. It's never been this tightened down. Now, some of that's just pure pandemic. I mean, because a lot of the time, well, in a normal season, we can go over to, at least there's a media availability and there's a practice and guys are coming off the field. We can talk to assistants. Off the record, and you can, or you can just see things that you don't get to see now. You don't see anything now because we're doing everything over Zoom. You get to know people, but now there's just this incredible distance. You know, even on game day, you're so detached because you can't be around the kids. The coaches, you know, you're very far away from the coaches. Everything's done in the post game on Zoom. It's efficient. I've never been done with my columns as early as I am now because you don't go down in the post game and do interviews. I mean, when a game gets over, an 11 a.m. game gets over at 2:30 or so, you would go down to a post-game setting that wouldn't begin usually for about an hour. It takes that long. And then you're talking to people for an hour. So that's 3:30, 4:30. Then you meander back to the press box. You know, and sometimes it's 5 before you start writing. Well, now I'm done at 5 almost, because you just stay up in the press box and get on a Zoom, Frost talks, and a few players talk, and boom, you're done. And then you write. So it's really interesting how it's more efficient, but you don't get nearly as much information now. Okay, what else we got? Go ahead.
We must show something in our defensive alignment that the coaches see on film, because it seems like every team can get that long run. I don't know if we're just in the box, but we must give them somehow.
Yeah, those. What Chenander said yesterday was, you know, why is it hard to hold down teams in the Big Ten? Once again, we're having this conversation now, which is Nebraska's run defense isn't where it should be. So we're doing this every year. And Chenander, well, last year was, I've said it to you guys before, it gets old, I know. Last year they gave up 5.7 yards per carry in the Big Ten, which is an incredible number. I mean, I never thought I'd live to see a time where Nebraska was giving up 5.7 yards a carry. They did it last season. This year, it's 4.7, so it's better. But it's last in the league. I mean, or 13th. And, I mean, he said that where you got to start is with not giving up those big plays. You've seen that. You've seen that the last 2 weeks. We've seen it the last 3 weeks, because Northwestern had a couple. They leaked out a couple of long runs too. And you know, Illinois had a 58-yarder, 38-yarder, and those obviously hurt you statistically. They had 100 yards and 2 runs. So that's just bust. They're just getting bust. One or two guys out of position, and boom, the guy's running down the field. Maybe you're getting caught in the wrong defense. It's sort of hard to tell sometimes. But I don't know. There's a million ways you can frame it up, but it just comes down to you're not doing what you should be doing. And you can't win that way. Not in this league. This league is, I think it caught us by surprise a little bit. It didn't catch Pelini by surprise. I've told you guys, that story many times, and it's still relevant. When they moved to this league, when it was, you know, when it became official in the summer of 2010, he said, "We're not ready for it." He played in it, so he understood it. Bo's from that country. He's from Youngstown. He knows Big Ten football. It's way different than Big 12 football. You got to be able to stop the run, and that means having bigger linebackers. There's a mentality and a culture that's involved in that, and I still think Nebraska's trying to adjust to it. They had the guys, you know, in 2010, remember, they had the guys in 2010, 2009. They had it to a point. I mean, they were winning and playing great defense despite not having a lot of depth at linebacker, which that's critical. But they're just not in a place yet where they're holding up well enough in that part of the game. Now, there's a whole other discussion that's fascinating to me about what it goes with your question. There's a guy at Buffalo, Lance Leipold, that he's the head coach at Buffalo. And by the way, Buffalo's picked to win the MAC. He's a good friend of mine. He's been a friend of mine for 25 years. He used to coach at UNO when they had football. He was an offensive coordinator at UNO early in his career. He became the on-campus recruiting coordinator at Nebraska. That's how I got to know him. We've stayed in touch. And when Nebraska was struggling in the Big Ten with Bo, he told me something just one time, but it stuck in my head, and it'll always stick in my head. He said, because Beck was not running a downhill running game with Bo. They were running spread. And Lance said, he says it's going to be hard. Now, Lance, by the way, has 6 national championship rings from Wisconsin Whitewater. He knows football really well. 6 title rings. Watch, but I think Buffalo plays, I don't know if they play tonight, but they're 2-0. You watch Buffalo's team, by the way. No way Nebraska beat Lance's team. Lance's got 2 great running backs, a great left tackle, great tight end. They're loaded. But anyway, what he told me was, in the Big Ten, you better be able to run it downhill. You better have a tough running game because in practice, you got to get ready because that's what they do in the Big Ten. They're going to run it at you. And if you're a spread team that doesn't run it physically, on Saturday, it'll be a little bit of a shock to your system. Your guys just won't, you know, they know it's coming, but it's still, geez. Now look at these dudes coming at us, play after play after play. And he thought that that would be an issue. And I think he's been right. I mean, it's not that hard. It's not a hard theory to follow. It's very simple, but I'll never forget when he said that. And, you know, you can talk your way around it a little bit, but I think we've seen it a little. And I'm a little concerned about that with Frost, except he ran it 60% of the time last year. And at Oregon, you know, I always said, tell you guys, they had that guy, Royce Freeman, who was a big, big, strong running back. They had a pretty good power running game at Oregon. We're just not seeing that this year. He's seeing the damn quarterback run all the time. I don't know. That's a long-winded answer to a basic question, but that is definitely something to watch this week. I watch it like a hawk. What's the yards per carry? What's Iowa getting? I mean, watch it at halftime, see what they're getting. If they're getting 5 yards a carry, it's going to be really hard to beat them. Even if it's a close game, it's going to be hard to beat them because they'll have the advantage late in the game. And then the other thing, that Rick Kaczynski said, he told me, he comes on our show, he understands this stuff. These guys understand this stuff at a high level. He said, you've got to be able to run the ball because of, look at the weather. I mean, Tom said that all the time. It's got to be cold. I mean, if you think about, like, yesterday trying to throw the ball when it was misting and 30 degrees, it's hard to do, but you can run it. I don't know. I'd like to talk to Scott about it sometime, and I probably will in the off season. Yes?
Well, I'll ask the same question, and it goes right with what you're saying that I asked last week. Do we have a chance to recruit halfway deep an excellent running back?
Yeah.
And Sean just kind of poo-pooed it off and said, well, we got some tight ends coming. But we need a running back.
Yeah. I think, you know,
we need to.
Okay, on the bright side, to turn the conversation in a positive direction, I think it actually starts up front, and I do think they're recruiting really well offensive line. I think the offensive line recruiting is strong. It's not paid dividends, maybe, like I thought it would by this point, but there's good young linemen in the system.
Well, if the young linemen bring a good running back, then it's good. Young linemen are still having bad running back,
well,
any difference how good?
Yeah, I'm not giving up on the young running backs. I get it though. You know, they're playing Marvin Scott, and he's a true freshman. And he looks okay. He looks fine. But fine. They don't have Dedrick Mills, so that's changed the conversation a little. You wonder what we'd be talking about if Dedrick had played the whole game against Penn State and the whole game last week. Now, I don't know if it would have made that big of a difference, but I think Dedrick is the kind of running back you need in the Big Ten. I do think they have that sort of running back. He's just hurt. Now, behind him, I don't know if I'd say that they have what they need. They say they have what they need. Marvin Scott's been okay. Then they're playing Ramir Johnson. Now, what I would say to Scott, very blunt very blunt terms. Vermeer's a decent player. He's a tough kid from New Jersey. But he's 5'8", 190. That works in the AAC, in my opinion. Now, this is just my opinion. But I say it to the guys all the time. And they're starting to listen to me. When I see a 5'8", 190-pound running back in the Big Ten, you don't see it very often. They're for a reason. They better be exceptionally good if they're that small. And even when Amir, when Amir's sort of a, you could say, well, what about Amir Abdullah? He wasn't a big guy. Well, it's a little different discussion. I watched Amir close. All those guys know I'm almost obsessed with the running back position. So I know. I've watched it in Nebraska for 30 years. Amir was little, sort of. By the time he was a junior, he wasn't little. He put a bench press by his bed. I mean, he knew he had to get bigger and stronger. His neck got big, his shoulders got big. He was big. He had big legs anyway. But I didn't consider Amir a little running back at the end of his career. I mean, he was a Big Ten running back. He ran for 1,600 yards. Okay. Amir ran for 1,600 yards in the Big Ten. You don't do that as a little running back. He was a powerful guy. I'm not going to say that about Amir Johnson. He's a little guy.
We lost the guy to Texas Christian as, I think, their number one running back. What was his name?
I don't remember that. But anyway.
He was a running back for us, and now he's at Texas
Christian. Yeah, Ryan Held is the running back's coach, and I do think you got to watch that. You got to see if he can get the kind of guys that they, we became accustomed to four deep, running back depth chart that had four guys that you wouldn't see much of a drop off. You're not seeing that right now. Now, maybe they can get to that point. But remember, I mean, the thing you got to add is the 2018 class lost two guys. Maurice Washington was in the class of 218. They were counting on him. And they were counting on Greg Bell. Greg Bell left the program. Now, he's at San Diego State now, and he's putting up big yards. Different league, though. I'm not sure that Greg Bell would have been the answer here. I didn't think he was a physical enough runner myself, but he would say, well, I just ran for 160 yards against Hawaii. He's having a good year at San Diego State. So, that's why they're a little short. They had two guys in the class of 2018 that are no longer in the program. When that happens at one position like that, it can set you back a little bit.
Steve, how's it going to go on Friday?
Oh, what's that?
How's it going to go?
Oh, we got it. Are we done?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, how's it go on Friday? They got to hold down the run if they have any prayer to win. They're going to have to play well on defense and on special teams. And if they do that, if they play really well on defense, like they did last year against Iowa, and really like they did in 18, for half the second half of the 18 game, really well on defense, really well on special teams, and force a few turnovers, probably you would need a couple to three to set you up. They could get out of there. They could get out of there with a close win. And that's what you hope. That they got to make some luck for themselves. And I'll end the speech that way. You can tell Moose is starting to lose patience a little bit. I was in the Northwest, I tell you this, guys. I was in the Northwestern press box and ran into Moose. And I told him that Juergens was going to be out. He didn't know that. And I said, yeah, it just doesn't seem like Scott is having much luck. And he just stopped and looked at me and said, you make your luck. So the boss is getting a little testy. So there you go. Again, thanks tons. It's good to see you guys. You guys are great fans. Oh, we got one more. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
I understand you had a bet with somebody that the loser had to buy steaks at Misty's.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything about Sean. So I'm just taking advantage of the young guy.
I'm not playing sports because that's probably illegal. But how'd that come out?
It came out really well for me.
Okay.
Yeah, he picked up Penn State to beat Iowa. And I said, well, we'll just have we'll bet lunch. He wanted to bet lunch on it. I said, all right, we'll bet lunch. He goes, it's got to be somewhere nice, Misty's. I said, all right. I mean, it's your bet. So I'm going to order off the dinner menu.
I'm sorry.
I appreciate you bringing that up. Anything I win is good because it doesn't happen very often. Thanks, guys. We'll do it again next.